This is the School Success Podcast, a podcast for school leaders to learn from other school leaders what's working and what's not, and to get inspiration and encouragement, as well as strategies to grow school enrollment, connect with families, retain teachers, recruit teachers, and everything in between. You guys are heroes, and I cannot thank you enough for pouring into this next generation that's coming behind us. My goal is you will take at least one thing away from every episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. Please enjoy the School Success Podcast. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the School Success Podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Slater, joined by a new friend out of Langhorne, Pennsylvania, Mr. Todd Williams, who's the president and CEO of Cairn University. They're doing some awesome, awesome things, and I met him through getting connected on LinkedIn, had a conversation with him, and I was like, you know what? I love this guy's story. I want to hear his story about how he went from teaching and being in college to going to K-12 education and leading over there to then going back to college. We're going to hear about all of that. And maybe you're in similar shoes. Maybe you're at a college university teaching right now, or maybe you're at a K-12 school. And maybe you thought about going to the college university route. This will be something you guys can hear from somebody who's done just that. But before we dive into him and his story, I'm going to shout out our amazing sponsors over America's Christian Credit Union. They're celebrating 65 years of service this year, and they are a freaking awesome credit union that provides essential school banking services and tuition financing programs for schools looking to reduce their risk and administrative burden. And you guys can check out all about what they do at americaschristiancu.com/schools. That's americaschristiancu.com/schools. If you guys aren't familiar with what they do, they have these tuition financing loans that you can get where if you're a school, you can offer it to all of your families, and families can go to America's Christian Credit Union, get a financing loan there that they can pay for the tuition, and you get all the tuition up front as the school, and the parent will then pay the credit union monthly like they would on any other loan. But you get your money up front, and it doesn't cost your school anything, so make sure you go check them out at americaschristiancu.com/schools. All right, jumping into our interview today, I'm going to pass it off to Todd to introduce himself. So Todd, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Great. Thanks, Mitch. It's great to be with you. I'm glad we were able to connect and get to know you a little bit and what you're doing with your work with the K-12 community, which is a community that's near and dear to me and near and dear to us here at Cairn University. So I'm really excited about it. It's my experience is one that I think I'm really grateful for, and I hope that it's helpful to others. Yeah.
I love it. Well, hey, before we dive in, I always ask the same question to start Sure. Everything out. If I was to visit where you are in Pennsylvania, and you were like, Mitchell, you got to do this to have a full experience, what would you say you have to do? That you have to go to this restaurant, you have to do this touristy thing? Is there something that stands out to you that you're like, you have to do it?
Well, we're in Bucks County and just outside of Philadelphia. So I would say, you know, you have to see the city of America's founding. You got to see the city of brotherly love. I mean, everything's down there. Independence Hall, Liberty Bell, you know, we've got great sports teams. I mean, you know, everybody should be a Phillies fan, an Eagles fan, a Sixers fan. So anyway, so, you know, I think it's a great area to take in. There's lots of stuff here to do. And we're really grateful to be in a metropolitan area like Philadelphia and be a part of that community. So you can't miss that. And of course, everybody talks about cheesesteaks, and there's more than two places to go to. Yeah. So, yeah.
Now, I'm a huge cheesesteak fan, but I've never had a Philly, true Philly cheesesteak. And I know that there's the two that.
Yeah, Pat and Gino's. Yeah.
Okay, so where's your favorite?
Well, and there's lots of other places, you know, the Campos, Delisandro's over on the west side. I mean, almost anywhere you go in Philadelphia where they're making the steak for real on a griddle, and they give you the choice of with or without cheese whiz, you're in good shape. You can't really
go. Is a legit Philly one with mushrooms, peppers, and onions, or is that like an added thing that they've added later that just ruins it?
Yeah, you do that. No, peppers, onions are good, but you got to have with or without, they say, you know, so you sort of have to do the cheese. You got to think about whether you want the cheese. People do both. So,
okay. I definitely want,
it's gotta be juicy and falling apart though. So,
you know. Okay. I want it to be a little wet, cause that is the best, in my opinion, Philly cheesesteak.
Right.
So All right. It's on the list. Well, Todd, give me a little background on yourself. You have a really cool story about where you've kind of come and gone, and we'll kind of just, we'll dive into your story. I'll ask some questions, you know, that top of my head, but I'd love to hear kind of just how you got to where you are today, and we'll dissect that a little bit.
Yeah, so I'm serving as the president of my alma mater. This is where I went to college at Cairn University, and so it's a place that's very near and dear to me because I did study here, and it was very formative in my life. My wife and I was a married student. My wife had completed her education and is a registered nurse. We actually met at a Christian camp in Pennsylvania where I was running the horsemanship program, and Dawn came in one summer as the nurse, and I was sick a lot that year and hanging out in the nurse's station. So we met, we're married there, served there, and then went off to school. And I finished up here studying Bible and theology, and then went to graduate school at Temple University because I was interested in studying in a particular theory base. And there were only two places left in the country that were doing that, and one of them happened to be right here near where I was already studying at Cairn. So I did that. I finished my master's degree and was thinking about what was next. And the school asked me to come back to teach social and behavioral sciences. So I came back, I guess, a little over a year after I graduated to teach social and behavioral sciences, and then went straight into my PhD work in the same program at Temple, and then ended up sort of trying to decide. I was thinking what I wanted to do was, apart from all the other things up until that point that I wanted to do, including, you know, the ministry or politics and communications work, where I ended up studying social theory, thinking that I wanted to do social theory research in an institution like Temple University as a person of faith, and then ended up, you know, a full-time position opened here, and I took it and never looked back. So I was in the classroom teaching students, which is near and dear to me. I still teach every semester as a president. I was on the faculty and then became the undergraduate dean, probably at a younger age than I should have. There was an opening and they asked me to consider it, and I did that. So I started in administration in the late 90s here as the dean of undergraduate education, and then you know, made the transition that we're going to talk about to the K-12 world and then back. But I've been president for 16 years. I served as provost for about 3 years prior to that as a chief academic officer. So I've been around the place since I came here as a student, as a married student in 1990. So I have a long history with the place. It's my alma mater. And, you know, I love what we're doing and love to work with students. So,
yeah. I love it. And so you're in this school, and then you suddenly go, you know what, I'm going to leave and go to K-12 education, you know? So what came of that, man?
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting story. And I was on the faculty teaching full time here, and then served as the senior vice president for undergraduate education. When the school at that time, which was Philadelphia College of Bible, our name was Philadelphia College of Bible, my predecessor, the president when I was a student, who's a very close friend of mine as well, had made the decision with the board to pursue university status, which in Pennsylvania at the time was a rather rigorous process. So I undertook this project as the senior vice president for undergraduate education with others to work towards university status for then Philadelphia College of Bible. We achieved that in 2000, 2001, as we were going through that year. And that meant restructuring the organization. And so what we were doing was moving from a graduate dean and undergraduate dean to a single academic officer as a provost. Well, at the time, I think I was 30. Yeah, I would have been 33 or so at the time. And there was another more seasoned and experienced person who was dean of graduate school. And the president was having to restructure on recommendations that came from a committee that I was part of to reorganize. And so I was looking around at the time thinking, you know what, I don't know that I'm ready for the provost position at 33. I don't know, you know, which way the president's going to go. You know, I certainly was doing well here and everything was going well. And then, you know, I just felt my grip loosening a little bit and thought, you know, I really want to think about other experiences. So I was looking around, not actively, just kind of seeing what would happen as we restructured. Certainly they would have found a place for me on the faculty or in administration. But I, in the process of talking to some other folks in the Washington, D.C. area, a former student of mine kept asking me, he was calling me over several months saying, you know, this Trinity Christian School in Fairfax, Virginia is looking for a headmaster. Do you mind if I give them your name? And I said, no, don't give them my name. I'm not doing that. I'm not an education person. I'm in education, but that's not really my background. I went to the College of Education at Temple, but it was in social psychology. And he called me back 2 weeks later and said, you know, I really think you should let me give you their name, give them your name. And I kept saying no, no, no. And then I was in Washington, D.C. for some other meetings, and I called him and said, you know, look, if they can meet me on Thursday when I'm in DC, I'll swing by and take a look. And I took the train down and I took the train out to the Northern Virginia suburbs, met some people there, toured the campuses that were spread out, a couple of church basements and a storefront somewhere. And I called my wife on the phone on the train on the way back and said, I have no idea how to explain this, but if they want to consider me for the job, I think I'm going to take it. And she said, what? I mean, you know, that's not something we ever talked about. And I think what happened was two things. One, I saw the commitment of parents, board members, and faculty members to what they were doing there in Fairfax. And I was convinced that if you couldn't have a thriving Christian school in the shadow of the nation's capital, you shouldn't be able to have one anywhere. And it was a school that had a good founding, but was kind of languishing a bit, a little stalled out. And I thought, okay, well, you know, they really got under my skin. And so I decided I'd start the process. So we started this conversation. Of course, you know, on their end, you can imagine there are people saying, you know, why are we had a profile and it didn't, this guy doesn't fit it. You know, we weren't looking for someone from higher ed and what's that going to do to the school? And he doesn't have an education administration background. He's coming from a college. And, you know, I think that they had questions on their end and I had questions on my end. But I think when I saw what was taking place in those facilities and was looking at the kids, I was thinking, you know, this is just absolutely critical work. And I think I want to think about it. So that's how it started. And one of the interesting things that happened was, and this is sort of now not necessarily about the college to K-12 and back transition, but more sort of a personal thing for your audience, is I think when I think about what I'm doing now as a university president, I think I'm somewhat shocked that I'm doing. I never would have said in my 20s that's a job I wanted. And I think my fellow students when I was here would be shocked, you know, are probably somewhat surprised. It just suited me. I think you get moving forward and things start to unfold. So what happened to me was, as I was thinking about this school and some other positions in the Washington, D.C. area, my predecessor and I, who had a close relationship, very good working relationship, I came back and said to him, look, I said, I know you got a difficult choice to make about this structure and provost, and I know you'll find a slop. I'm not worried about that. Here's the thing. I would like to know now at 33 years old, 35, you know, as we're moving forward, I'd like to know now whether I have this in me to work with a board, cast a vision, lead from the executive position, rather than aspire and strive for it over the next 20 years of my career, get to it and realize I'm not suited to it, and then wish I'd spent the last 20 years in the classroom. So if you'll release me, I'd like to pursue this opportunity. And he looked at me and said, you know, that's what happened to me when I came here. Basically, he was in an institution where he probably had a better future, but he wanted to get tested as a president. So he made a significant move. And I think sometimes people are nervous in their careers to do something that may seem out of character or out of off the path a little bit from what they were thinking. You have to stop thinking about the actual role and start thinking about the experiences and the skills and the way that you're going to be stretched, because you can answer those questions. The earlier you can answer those questions, the more gratifying you'll find your work over the course of your lifetime. I've met so many people in education, both in the K-12 world and the higher ed world, who think they want to be in a different area of work within education. And they work and they position and they strive and they, you know, do everything they have to do. And then they get there and realize, what was I thinking? This is absolutely insane. I was much happier as a gym teacher or much happier as an English teacher. And so I think what you want to do is test out those skill sets early on. And I had an opportunity to do that. And a president who was, and so much so that, I mean, he gave me great advice about it. And so that's what happened to me. I ended up feeling a bit of relief and then at release and then went to Trinity and Fairfax to be the headmaster there. And then, so they had some work on their end to adjust their expectations. I was going into a field that I never saw myself in. It was a great time. That whole transition and decision-making point was really instructive for me for the rest of my life. Yeah. So,
man, did the guy who let you, like said, the president, CEO guy, was he the one that hired you back when you came back? Okay.
Yeah. So he called me, you know, 4 years later and said, yeah, I'd like you to think about coming back as provost with a view to succeeding me as president. And I have to say that I would not have been positioned for that role had I not done what I did at Trinity. We reoriented that school. We restructured it. We actually raised money to build a single unified campus. They owned 25 acres in Fairfax County when I arrived, but they hadn't built on it. So we had a very successful capital campaign. We were the first, one of the first, if not the first, Christian school in the country to use tax-free municipal bonds to build the campus. And it's thriving now. We were capped. It was, that whole story is another issue. But if I hadn't gone through those 4 years and he asked me to come back from a teaching position or a think tank, the things that I was looking at, I wouldn't have been in a position to serve as the president. So what he released me to do, I think he knew was going to prepare me, if it was successful, prepare me to step back into this role. And so, and he reached out, and that's the way it went. Yeah.
Man. And so tell me, I'd love to know, what are, if you could put it in me, three things, I mean, it could be a list of like, what are some of the biggest things that you learned being at Trinity when you're at the, in the K-12 world, or three ways that really got you improved as a person or stretched you? Like, is there just something that maybe stood out to you? Like, man, this really, I needed that in my life to get me ready for this next area.
Yeah. So I think there, I would sort of categorize them in a couple. The easiest one to think about is a skill set. So, you know, obviously you don't work with parents a lot in higher education. You do, but not the way you do in the K-12 world. And I had never really been responsible to raise money before, which was significant, and to be in charge of an entire institution. So the executive management pieces, the I had done some work around vision because as the undergraduate dean, I was responsible for all the academics, but fundraising, working directly with the board and doing sort of the executive management of the entire organization, those were skill set issues that were really critical for me to learn. And you learn by doing. And, you know, I watched and I studied organizational theory. I was ready to do what I had to do, but I learned a lot there. On the other side of it was, you learn a great deal about yourself, and you learn how to wrestle with what I call the paradox of confidence and humility, right? To be a good leader, you have to be confident. You also have to be humble. And the way that you know that someone is humble is, you know, anybody walks around saying, yeah, I've been working on humility and I really got it down. I mean, as soon as you're doing that, you're off, right? You can't say humility is my strong suit. That's not the way it works. And anybody who walks around saying, you know, I'm not really that confident, is generally trying to overcompensate. But to actually just get in and do the work, and in your quiet moments and with me, with my wife and with the people that are close to me, really begin to develop the character, work on the character side of things as a leader, to realize that you have to be bold and confident, humble and respectful of those around you. And I think I got stretched in a way along those lines that I wasn't getting stretched in the position I was here. I also think that there was something in the nature of the K-12 world that was really pivotal for me. And one of the things is, I just think that people who teach in the K-12 world are just incredible people. The workload, the responsibility, it's the content, it's the classroom management. Once you get beyond the lower school levels, you're talking about, for some people, 4 or 5 preps, 5 days a week. You know, in the college ranks, people might teach 2 days a week or 3 days a week. They might have, you know, 3 classes, but it's only 1 prep or something like that. So I was really impressed with how hard people in the K-12 world work. I didn't really think much about it other than my own experience as a student. I think the administrators are people who do a lot with very little. You're navigating parents who are paying tuition and taxes. There were a lot of dynamics in the K-12 world that I had not had any exposure to, which I think opened my eyes to what families are dealing with, what faculty members and administrators are dealing with, what staff members deal with, what funders deal with, parents. It was phenomenal. I felt like the world just sort of cracked open for me to see, because I believe education is absolutely critical. And I think one of the things that I did, and I think I might have mentioned this to you before, Mitch, is I took a little bit of what I learned in the higher education world and brought it to the K-12 world. When I came back, I brought some of the K-12 world back to the higher ed world. There's a lot to learn from one another. And, you know, and I think that was a phenomenal experience. And right after I came back, after I assumed the presidency here, especially, I'd spent a lot of time with K-12 leaders to talk about that. I think there's a lot to learn from one another because we're in the same work, but the structures are different. You know, and there's some things that are different in terms of workload and schedule. And there are some things that are part of a higher education mindset that were really helpful to us at Trinity. And when I came back, I found myself thinking in new ways about higher education. There's always this divide. Somehow you look at it like it's, you know, the big leagues and, you know, and you know, the minor leagues. And it's just not that way. We're all in the same work. The age of the students are different. The length of the year might be different. The way your labor is divided might be different. But we're all in the process of educating students. And we kind of have to see it as the same work and then sort of learn from one another what it takes to do it the most effectively. Yeah. And so it was a great, I mean, it was hard to leave here to go there and hard to leave there to come back on some level, because I enjoyed both arenas quite a bit. Yeah.
What do you miss most? If there was one thing you missed the most from the K-12, what would that be?
I think it is the intergenerational campus community that was part of it. We had so many friends that were parents and teachers and staff, and, you know, at the college and university level, you're dealing with parents, you're dealing with alumni, but you're not dealing with everybody together. So the students come, parents drop them off, you see them at graduation. The K-12 world, and I love this about Trinity, and this is true in a lot of the Christian schools that I've worked with in consulting or speaking at, the sense of community is pretty significant, because you have parents and grandparents and donors and faculty and staff and students of all ages. You know, when we built the school at the first building at the Trinity campus there in Fairfax, we were only building one building, and we put lower, middle, and upper school all in the same building. And then people said, well, you really can't do that. I said, no, what we have envisioned is that the upper school kids will take an interest in and care for the younger kids, and the younger kids will, you know, look to them as an example. We created this sort of intergenerational community, and it was just great. So I think if there's one thing I miss, it's that energy of that dynamic community of all the generations working together, all the various constituencies constantly tripping over one another.
And I love that model so much, because right. I've seen it work, and it just makes sense when you think about that model of like them looking up and looking down. I mean, I love that. And so I would love to know, because I'm assuming you can't take that one back to college.
Right.
What were some of the things like you said, oh, I took, brought some college into the K-12, K-12 into the college, like things. If you could share real quick on what was something you brought from the college thing into the K-12 that maybe a K-12 school listening would go, oh, that's a really good idea. Maybe I can implement that. And then vice versa, K-12 is listening, and you said, I took this K-12 thing and brought it into the college for a K-12 to go, oh, I don't appreciate that part as much that he's right. Making it sound way bigger.
Right. So I think one of the things that I brought from the college setting, probably largely because of the weight of higher education accreditation, and also the fact that we had just moved through this university status application, is the importance of documentation, codification, foundational things in place, that things have to be organized and written down and codified and giving stability and a process of formalizing things that I think sometimes gets missed in a lot of K-12 communities. Kind of you formalize the scope and sequence and you formalize, but the big institutional thing, you know, that are constantly on our minds. These are our positions on the following things. This is why we're doing this. There was a lot of that, which I think has improved over the years in the K-12 world, and probably in public sectors, it's there for regulatory issues. But where I was, you know, at Trinity, there was a lot of in my observations out of the gate, a lot of things that were just underdeveloped. And so it was giving them a vision for developing as an organization in what they could be organizationally, not just in terms of missionally, but how to sort of tighten up and firm up and formalize. And that's part of our world in higher ed, because we're under so much scrutiny. And so that was one thing. I think too, the fundraising aspect, I think it's an ancient book now. It was a book and articles written on fundraising years and years ago, from candy sales to committed donors, I think it's gotta be, it's more than 30 years old now. But one of the things I think that happened is the amount of money that we have to raise right now, because K-12 schools, particularly, you know, private and Christian K-12 schools where funding is an issue, you're charging tuition, you also have to raise money. And we raised a lot of money at Trinity, both for the campus and for scholarships and operational offsets and those kinds of things. And you really do have to bring a major donor fundraising advancement mentality to it. You know, it's really hard to build a $13 million building on hoagie sales. Right.
Yeah.
And what you end up doing is elevating expectations that we're all going to get behind this. We're going to collect loose change, and we're going to sell sandwiches, or we're going to sell candy bars. and everybody thinks they're going to get over the mark. And then you realize the nut is millions of dollars, and that's not going to be raised that way. You're going to have to go build the confidence of the community. All the money that needs to be raised for our schools can't come from the parents. That's certainly where you start. But what do you do to convince community leaders and business people and others in your region and outside your region that what you're doing matters and they should get behind it? So I think some of that bigger perspective on things like fundraising, I brought that. I think I brought that from higher ed to that experience at Trinity. And a lot of other schools, it's not like K-12 schools haven't been doing that. It's just a lot of them don't. And I do think even when your resources are limited, you don't need to spend a lot of money and go get a development professional. You just have to sort of be very careful about what you're doing around fundraising to make sure that it is actually productive. I think the other thing that happens a lot is the kind of control around brand and institutional direction and messaging. You get a lot, all that dynamic community thing, parents, faculty, staff, PTOs, you have a lot of people. And one of the things I think that happens a lot in the K-12 world is people say, well, you know, the issue with that school is there's no vision. And my observation is in a lot of places, it's not that there's no vision, it's that there's too many visions. You know, it's just everybody has a different vision of what the school is or should be or could be or wants to be or needs to be. And you have to sort of narrow that down, that the board and everybody gets on board with this is the singular vision and mission that we're after. And I think there was some of that that I brought from my experiences here to there. I think the thing that I brought back with me was thinking about how student-oriented and teaching-oriented the K-12 world is. You know, and I've said this forever here because this was my experience as a student at this institution, which is my alma mater. So often in higher education, people are there to create and to build a platform for themselves, you know, or to teach and leave. And I've never believed that that was you know, a good thing. But the other issue was that in watching in the K-12 world, what I realized was the K-12 teachers, they can't teach and leave, right? You know, they just can't. There's just too much to do. And I just am in awe of the level of commitment in the K-12 world and the faculty members in terms of how much time they give to students and how important teaching is. And I feel like we do that really well here. But I did bring a sense of the importance of that. I also think we've tried to build some of those community things in. We do much more with parent relations now, trying to create a multi-generational community at this institution as a result of that experience. And there's one other thing that I didn't think about too much until our most recent conversations is we actually managed to hold together it was a Christian school in Northern Virginia. When I got there, or sometime in the middle, I'm trying to think when the stat came down, about 90 different churches, 9 denominations, never a single fight the whole time I was there over anything theological, doctrinal, ecclesiastical, nothing. And that's often not the case in my world of Christian higher education, where schools are sort of narrowly defined to maintain your commitments and also have a degree of breadth. And so I learned some really good lessons there about, you know, board dynamics and holding a community together on the things that matter most. And I actually, they became the drum beats that I stuck to as a new president here. So, great experience. I actually still have something on my wall here from the cornerstone of the first building that we built down there in 2003. It's been on my wall ever since. And I draw inspiration from it every day. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. I love it. Well, as we kind of look to wrap it up there, Todd, I'd love to get from you. I know you've been in education a while. But if you had to share one piece of advice with school leaders listening, what would you say that one piece of advice?
Don't lose heart. Do not grow weary. What we do matters more maybe than ever in the 30 years I've been doing this. And it's so easy to get discouraged by what we see going on around us. But we can't do that. What we do matters now more than ever, I think. And teachers do more than dispense information. Your examples, your guides, your instructors, your sages, your counselors, the role that teachers play in the lives of students is significant. And it's never been more important for that group to work in tandem with parents and everybody has to be doing the same thing. What we're seeing now is this division between parents and the schools and all these kinds. And I think that that's a mistake. I think we need to pull together, decide what our community is committed to, and not grow weary in doing well. Just keep at it because it matters.
Love it. Love it. Well, I love what you're doing. I love all the years you put into education. So I want to say thank you for that. And thank you for continuing to do what you're doing there at Kern University.
Yeah, thank you, Mitch.
Remember up there, I'm going to come by and we're going to get a
cheese thing together. You're always welcome here. You're always welcome here.
Good. Appreciate it. Hey, thank you so much for your time today on the podcast, and wish you nothing but the best as you continue to do what you're doing.
Thanks, Mitch.
Well, another huge shout out and a thank you to Todd for taking time and being on the podcast today. I love what he's doing at Kern University, and I just loved his outlook on going from college to K-12 education, then back to college. And I thought that would be such a great episode to have for you guys to see kind of both sides of it. And I'm hoping, of course, that was able to happen for you guys. You could see both sides, and maybe it's something you want to get into teaching in a college or university, or maybe vice versa. Maybe you're listening to this right now and you are at a college or university and you heard his story and go, you know what, maybe I want to get into K-12 education. Whatever it is, I just wanted to have you guys see kind of both sides of it and his journey from that to K-12 and back to college. So hope you guys were able to take at least something away from that. And as usual on this podcast, my goal is that you guys take at least one thing from each episode that you can take back to your school to make it better than it is right now. And I hope that you were able to do that today. Now, some ways you guys connect with us. Our website is the first one, of course. So schoolsuccessmakers.com, go over there. We got a newsletter we're launching this fall. Would love you to make sure you don't miss out on that, as that's launching here soon. It's called the School Success Report. The team has been working extra hard on it. We have some great content that's going to be put in there you will not want to miss. So please make sure you subscribe to the newsletter completely free on our website, schoolsuccessmakers.com. We also have a private Facebook community just for you school leaders called School Success Makers. Again, just for school leaders on Facebook, completely free. I'm personally in there. Would love to see you in there as well and join some of the conversations that are happening. And if you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, or ideas, as always, you can message us through our website at one of the contact forms on there so we have your input, whether it's potential, you know, guests that you think we should be having on that we should reach out to, or introductions that you can make to us for the podcast, or just have a random question or some kudos or anything like that, that'd be awesome. But if you guys can give us a 5-star rating, wherever you're listening to this podcast, that helps us create more content because we love doing this. We love what you guys are doing as educators. We're hoping this is a great resource that you can then share with your friends and other colleagues that are educators as well. We will be back here next week with another amazing guest as usual on the School Success Podcast. We'll see you then.